I hope you know that you're going to come down off this emotional high that we call being in love.
Dr. Gary Chapman, author of The Five Love Languages, says that he's discovered learning how to speak your partner's language is what keeps the spark going.
Key would be to learn to speak each other's language now, so that when you get into marriage, it's pretty normal.
I'm Nina Porzucki, and this is The World in Words, a podcast about languages and the people who speak them. This week,
adjectives to try to describe you. Words are so meaningless when they're applied to you. Dictionary, smictionary, I need something better. It's insufficient combinations of some stupid letters. Who loves you, baby? Who loves you, baby? Yeah, who
love
loves you, baby?
And language. That's a track by the band Quarterbacks called Schmictionary. I kind of like it. This week, we've got a hodgepodge of stuff for you. Patrick and I kind of disappeared down several internet wormholes. Wormhole number one, that first clip you heard, languages of love. There are five, apparently, or at least this is according to relationship counselor Gary Chapman. The list doesn't include Italian or French or Portuguese. There's not a romance language to boot. Nope. The love languages are five ways of expressing and experiencing love. That is gifts, quality time, words of affirmation, acts of service, physical touch.
The good news is all of these can be learned. Even if you didn't receive them in childhood, you can learn them in adulthood if you understand why it's important to speak that language.
I like Chapman's positive attitude about multilingualism. It's never too late to learn any kind of language. You can take a quiz online and see what your love language is. I told you, internet wormhole. Turns out, I speak quality time. So for the next few minutes, let's spend some quality time together. Today, we'll hear from several folks who think about the intersection of language and love, like writer Virge Randall.
I grew up in a railroad flat, a tenement walk-up. There was not much privacy, so when my parents needed privacy, they would lapse into this dialect. And I knew that it was a special language they had.
But first, I've dragged Patrick Cox into the studio to explain the wormhole that he fell into this week.
Romance. I love to talk about romance, especially right after Valentine's Day. Like, it's great that we completely ignored Valentine's Day, but now, you know, a few days later, I can safely think about it.
Again.
Because I'm romantic, and I don't think, I just, you know, Valentine's Day just isn't big enough for me. I need to be romantic for all the other days.
You know, maybe it's the possessive, like, apostrophe. It's Valentine's Day. It's not, it's his day. It's the saint's day. It's not.
He can have that day.
It's not the day for all lovers.
I'm somewhat obsessed about what makes music romantic, because a lot of people say it's to do with the language that you sing in.
Like more beautiful languages versus less beautiful sung languages, or like that's so subjective though, like language.
It's so subjective. It seems to me it has so much to do with, like, if one person fell in love with somebody who was from the former Soviet Republic of Georgia back in when they were 16 or something like that, they're going to hold that language up for the rest of their lives and just consider it totally beautiful if they have a great memory of a love from their teenage years.
Sort of like the first language that you learn as your second language. Your first second language, you sort of, there's some sort of romance with it. Like
first
it
love,
is your first love. I totally feel that way.
Oh, what is your first language?
Spanish, and I totally feel that way about Spanish.
Oh.
It's like, it's a beautiful language.
Well, I may have something for you, Nina.
Yeah.
Okay, so this song, I love this song because it feels like a competition between two languages that are often associated with great romance. They are Spanish and Portuguese.
Like which is more beautiful?
That's right. The first verse you hear is sung by the Brazilian singer Marisa Monte.
Uma vez eu tive uma ilusão. Não soube o que fazer com ela. Não soube o que fazer. Ela se foi porque eu a deixei. Porque eu a deixei.
very beautiful.
It's like honey. It's gorgeous. I mean,
Portuguese is beautiful.
What language could possibly top that? And that's Julieta Venegas singing in Spanish. And then they both sing together. So this song is called, well, in Spanish it's called Ilusión.
Oh, Patrick, you know what I was saying earlier about falling in love with the first language that you learn? Well, I actually think the Spanish is more beautiful.
Oh.
Maybe it's also I really like Julieta Venegas, and I don't know the other singer, but I like the Spanish bits of the song.
I gotta go with the Portuguese.
Really?
I don't know. There's something about the zzz that I love it.
It is an interesting sound, but I don't know. Or maybe also there's something to be said about when you can understand the words and something, you automatically are like, you know, biased to
right.
like it more.
Yeah.
Or it's the first language that I love.
Yeah. They are both beautiful. I've loved this song for many years now. Actually, I think I talked about it in a previous podcast. I'm not sure if I played it, but it's just something that's kind of bounced around my brain for years. And even if what you prefer Portuguese or you prefer Spanish or, you know, one of the other romance languages, they're all just totally gorgeous sound.
Romantic.
Right? So I wanted to set myself a little task that was maybe just a little bit more of a challenge. And that was to find something that is truly romantic sounding, that is sung in a language that a lot of people would think of as being ugly.
Okay, so here we get into subjective territory. What is an ugly language and to whom and to how? How is it ugly?
Well, it's very easy to find out these days. Internet forums. They are.
That's scary.
There are tons of them when it comes to discussions of quote, the ugliest language in the world.
Oh, I have some inklings on what's on those lists.
And people don't hold back in their feelings, that's for sure.
Oh, it's the internet. Why would they?
I'm going to give you a couple of quotes, some of the funniest ones, also some of the most sort of outraged and outrageous, I think. Here's one. There's no language worse than Vietnamese. As soon as I hear it, I want to smash someone or jump off the highest thing possible to end my life.
Oh, man.
It's not just the worst thing.
Vietnamese a really bad rap.
And that is basically, I'm almost certain it is by somebody who does not understand anything in Vietnamese. Yeah, here's another one. I just can't stand the disgusting gargling of the R's and the nasally sounds of French.
That's really funny.
You get the idea with these
people,
right? It's just pure hatred.
Yeah.
And is it really even based on the language or just something about the people who speak
it? It makes me think about that one video. You know the video of how people who don't speak English hear mm-hmm. English? And it's hilarious because it's so awful sounding and annoying.
Yeah. Yes. And my goodness, there must be so many people in the world who just hate the sound of English.
Yes, for sure. Okay. What's the next one?
Well, this is a language that I'm very sorry to say kept recurring in my search again and again. And I'll quote another of our nuanced internet contributors. The Danish language is by far the ugliest I have ever heard. It sounds like someone is repeatedly trying to throw up and failing.
Oh, poor Danes. That's so good. That's so good. The image of someone trying to throw up. So this is Danish.
That's right.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that it evoked someone trying to throw up, but I would say that there are definitely a lot of vowels going on right here.
There are a lot of vowels. They have three extra vowels in the language.
So many vowels.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's maybe that's part of that internet commenter's issue.
Then the sad thing is, as you know, I speak Danish.
Was that your first love language?
It kind of is. Actually, it's a second love, but it's stronger than the first love, which was French at school. So I think, yeah, because I went and lived
love.
In Denmark and all of that. Sort of cohabited with Danish. Mm, put it like.
A long-standing
It was almost like we were married. You know? We never got divorced, but I did move away.
I mean, did you think it was ugly?
Yes. I'm sorry, I have to be honest. Yes, I do. And I had this thing of, I think a lot of people have this response when they're learning Danish, or at least English-speaking people, maybe others too, is that you feel when you're in the sort of immersive early stages that there are certain facial muscles that you start using that you had no idea that...
Existed.
Existed, yeah. And
like, give me one of them.
Well, you know, there's the famous... expression, it's a dessert that is supposed to be the hardest thing to say in Danish.
Oh, yeah. I'm just like trying to mimic your like mouth there at the moment. I can't. Like, I can't. It's like the Romanian A with the circumflex on top with the hat.
What's
the
that sound
hat. Like? It's like, I blew it there. Sorry, all of you Romanians out there.
Okay, so I didn't play you that as an example of a piece of music that is beautiful. No,
that was the most vomit-like.
Yeah. That's from a movie in the 1960s. But I did want to really find something that was beautiful, a song that turned this ugly duckling, to use a Danish metaphor, into a beautiful swan.
Okay.
So first stop, again, is the internet. Listicles. I'm out of touch with, you know, whatever... good Danish music happens to be
Danish
there.
Music, yeah.
Yeah. So I was looking for suggestions. Here was one that I got. I like this because it's so goofy.
Okay, is this a Danish reggaeton song? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, it's a whole weird mashup.
Is this a love song?
No. Okay. But it's a love song of sorts. Yeah, it's an ode to a particular type of soft drink that exists only in Denmark, as far as I know. It's one of those glucosey sports drinks, and it's called Faxe Kondi. Faxe is the name of a small town. It's very well known in Denmark because of its brewery, and the Faxe company also makes soft drinks. And Kondi is a really, really interesting word, K-O-N-D-I. It's short for condition. It's like a slang term in Denmark, and it was being used when I lived there. It means good physique. It means if you add Kondi to anything, that just means in good condition. So these two guys in the song, they're just singing about how much of this stuff they drink. They drink it for breakfast. They drink it all day long. There are empty bottles everywhere. And they get these warnings from the dentist, which they ignore. And you know, this isn't even a paid ad from the Faxe company or anything like that.
All about soda.
It's just pure soda love.
All right, soda love. I can maybe get behind that. But do you have anything that's like truly a love song? Did you find anything that was like, oh, this is actually beautiful?
Well, this was where things got a little harder. I did search. I really searched. I listened to a ton of Danish love songs, and I really just didn't like any of them. And I was about to give up when I just came across through a Google search wedding planner websites, Danish wedding planner websites.
Whoa, this is a deep dive into the internet you took.
Oh, yeah, like planner websites and also forums for I think brides-to-be, all brides-to-be. I think I was the only man trolling this particular corner of the internet, you know, offering suggestions.
Of like songs to dance to at the wedding or to walk down the aisle.
Maybe do the first dance, you know, at the reception. I'm not sure exactly, but anyway, they were a bunch of like pop songs. Romantic pop songs. And I have to say that most of the songs were in English. It was stuff like, you know, Phil Collins, Sting. Yeah, it was depressing. But eventually, after listening to many, many, many songs in Danish, I found what I was looking for. You be the judge.
Hej skal vi to ikke bare falde der? Stå med åbne arme, stå med smil, stå for skud. Og ikke holde ned, og ikke bakke det ind. Ikke skærme det mod regn, eller sne, eller vind. Tro på, det kan stå selv, kilde uden forsvar. Tro på, det kan holde, det er så fedt, det vi er. Når jeg ser det hele højt op og fra. Jo, vi to er vel rigtig, jeg ved det bare.
Okay, what do you think, Nina?
Well, this is far more beautiful than the previous two songs that you have played for me.
Really, the bar was high, right?
So, like, I'm just wondering, is it actually a love song?
What
is she singing? Who is this? What is she singing about?
Okay, so this woman is called Marie Kay. And when I was reading up on her, I actually learned a new Danish word. This is a word that is, I think, reasonably recent. It's two English loan words that have been like pushed together. And that word is pop darling. All one word, pop darling.
That's so great.
It was pretty clear what it means. She was being described as Denmark's new pop darling.
Darling of pop. Yay, yeah. Dane.
The song is called Uden Forsvar, which means without defense. The lyrics are super romantic. It's about how her and her lover, they need to stay strong even when there's a headwind, when the going gets tough. But they feel they're up to it because they've let all of their defenses down.
They've become vulnerable.
I actually hadn't heard this song until a couple of days ago, and now it's totally earworming me in a very good way. I mean, I don't know if you get that sense of just how catchy it is on the first listen here, but I can assure you, after two or three listens, you'll just want to go back and back to it. It's fantastic. I love it.
Well, thanks, Patrick, for this beautiful introduction to a quote-unquote ugly language.
And at times a beautiful language.
Because every language can be beautiful, that's what I think.
That's right. Everyone gets a trophy.
Everyone. Julie Tatel Andresen is a linguist who teaches at Duke University. She's written books like Towards a History of American Linguistics and Linguistics and Evolution, and her latest is Languages of the World, an Introduction Through Culture and Cognition. Oh yeah, there's also her titles Tied Up, Captured, and Knocked Out.
For the past 20 plus years, I have also published romance novels.
She's got quite a back catalog, more than 20 romance novels. For Julie, it makes complete sense that she is both a linguist and a romance writer. Love and language at their very heart are driven by the same human need, she says.
What is love? It's connection. Holding hands, hugging, kissing, right? What is language? It's connection to all other people who speak your language. It is connection to your culture. It heavily determines identity. Your language. So the actual relationship between love and language is brought out in high relief when you lose connection. So when you lose love, there's nothing more painful. And if you don't have love, people will mask the pain of that lack of connection, often through substance abuse, right? Okay, so what happens when you lose a language? Here, this is rather dramatic. Indigenous languages worldwide are really threatened right now, and there are language revivals all around the country. Shinnecock Indians, right in Long Island, as you know very well, and the Maori in New Zealand have been reviving their language since the early 80s when it was really on the decline. What they've discovered with the Maori language revival is an improvement in the health of the Maori community. Like cardiovascular disease, obesity, certain kinds of
physiology, health. Like real physiology.
So losing a language is as consequential as losing love, and they're both about connection. So in my mind, they go absolutely together at every moment.
Which brings me to the final story today, a story about what happens when you lose love and subsequently language. This is Virge Randall's story. Virge is a native New Yorker and the daughter of Italian immigrants.
I'll give you a little backstory of a comment my late mother made once. She and my father were both Sicilian speakers, and it wasn't just a Sicilian language, but a dialect from a very small region. And because I grew up in a railroad flat, a tenement walk-up, there was not much privacy. So when my parents needed privacy, they would lapse into this dialect. And I knew that it was a special language they had. And years later, after my father died, I was talking to my mother. She had moved into a retirement community, and she was the last of her generation. And she said that the people were very nice, but none of them spoke her dialect, and she was forgetting some of her words. And she said, "I'm losing my Italian."
Virge's thought about her mom's comment in the months and weeks and years since losing her own husband, Michael Randall. He died a few years ago from liver disease. Of course, Virge and Michael didn't speak Italian, but they still had their own dialect, something that Virge has come to call the language of us. She wrote about it for the online journal Narratively.
It was the language of couples. It's the language of, I think, really bonding. Any group of people who have a shared experience develop over time, I think, a shorthand, a kind of an in-joke, some would call it. And I really missed the in-jokes that I had with Michael.
Now, we all know what it is to speak a language of us, be it with your partner or a friend or a family member or even a camp buddy or work colleagues. It's that insider language that you develop with people you spend a lot of time with. And over 30 years of marriage, Virge and Michael had built up quite a vocabulary.
Michael had a 14-year-old sense of humor, which I really enjoyed, but some of them were like punchlines to dirty jokes. That's, you know, and I'm not going to drag you through the whole joke, but one of his favorites was, if we were trying something different to eat, like some different food or something, Michael would say, "If you like it, I'll give you a whole one." Oh, God. You can imagine what the setup to that was.
Each turn of phrase in the language of us has a story. And one of my favorites that Virge shared, "do an Uncle Joe."
I don't know if I could give the image justice, but my Uncle Joe and my Aunt Angie had been married 50 years. And Uncle Joe was a very forthright kind of guy. And, you know, it was kind of late in the festivities, and everybody had been drinking, and we're paying, you know, talking to all of our guests, and Michael and I went over to say hi to Uncle Joe and Angie, and he took a gulp of his Asti Spumante and looked at his wife and looked at Michael and said, "You got to be willing to lose an argument."
It's funny. It's good advice.
It sure was. And Michael adopted that. We both did. And so when an argument would go round and round, sometimes Michael would say, "I'll do an Uncle Joe," and that would be that. I'd say it too, but not as often as Michael.
Will you tell me a little bit about Michael? What did he do for a living? What kind of guy was he?
Michael was kind of a Renaissance man. He was a wonderful dresser, and he was into computers and software programming before it was cool. And I don't know, he was just this really, like, funny, cool guy who was really smart, and who was okay with, this is going to sound awfully conceited, but he was okay with me being smart, too. He liked that.
When Michael got sick, one phrase became important shorthand.
Just a bump in the road.
You would say that to him, or he would say that to you, or?
I would say that to him. I said it a lot towards the end. I was a very nervous driver. I'm a native New Yorker. I got my license when I was 45.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was quite an experience. I mean, I would sweat my body weight anytime I had to get into the car. But Michael was in no shape to drive, so I would drive. There was a bump in the road that I would have to drive over to take him to the hospital for another meeting with his transplant team. We'd hit this one bump, and I would just go really slowly over it. There was a sign that said, calming, and Michael would say, calming, you know, just kind of talk me over this little bump, which was really no big deal, and then we'd go on our way.
And so that bump in a road became a metaphorical bump in the road or part of your lingo?
It became both, yeah, because I was trying to remind him that it was just a minor thing, it wasn't a major thing, just get over it and everything will be fine. And he would remind me to be calm.
Michael died on March 14th, 2009. He was 68 years old.
That was Pi Day and the birthday of Albert Einstein, whom Michael greatly admired. He would read books about relativity for entertainment value, which just knocked the heck out of me. I was like, wow! So I thought that it was Michael's fitting and puckish sense of humor that was when he would exit.
After Michael died, Virge still found herself speaking and hearing their language.
I would hear a song lyric because Michael liked to use song lyrics sometimes. The original's still the greatest and, you know, things like that. And I would freeze, physically just stop what I was doing and I'd be locked in that memory. And I couldn't really move on. And I hit on the idea of writing the lyric and the phrase and the memory and the moment on a piece of paper and putting it in a box that I called the mic box. And then I was able to move forward and continue with what I was doing.
The mic box has gotten quite full over the years. Virge is still collecting words and phrases and song lyrics, though the entries have become fewer as time passes. She hasn't lost their language. It's all there in the box. But still, Virge is keenly aware. Like any language, if you don't use it, you lose it. I asked her to read the last paragraph of her essay. It was the part that I read several times to myself.
Like my mother, I can't remember some of my words. I fear I'm losing my Italian, too. Losing a language for a community smaller than a Sicilian village. A nation of two, now one. But no matter what, I will keep looking and remembering, appreciating each turn of phrase anew, savoring each moment and memory. I can hardly do otherwise. I'm the last speaker of us, now.
I love just the idea of the language of love is not I love you or I want to be with you or I need you or anything, but these small everyday phrases that we say to one another that have meaning beyond something else.
That's
that
right.
Knit you together.
You could go to a store, you know, and spend $2 on a card that says I love you. But it takes a lifetime to be able to say it's just a bump in the road.
We make every minute count, yeah. Our share is always the biggest amount. Other guys imitate us, but the original's still the greatest. Got our own way of walking. We got our own way of talking, yeah.
Virge Randall. She has a blog on NewYorkNatives.com called Don't Get Me Started. I'll put a link to her essay, Losing the Language of Love.
on our website, pri.org/language. And that's all for this week. Thanks for spending some quality time with me. Patrick and I will be away next week reporting, but we'll be back soon. And in the meantime, you can always tweet us at LingoPod, or I'm at Porzuki. That's P-O-R-Z-U-C-K-I. And as always, thanks for listening.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI. Oh.